we have this bill that was passed in 2005, and it was strongly influenced by the big providers in the industry. And it was really an attempt to create hurdles for local governments getting into the broadband business, either by providing services directly, for example, like the city of Longmont does, but also even to create hurdles for local governments that do not want to be service providers but want to invest in building new or expanding broadband networks where they can then do public-private partnerships with private providers or ISPs who will connect to backbone networks and use that to expand broadband into other new communities where we don't have either good broadband, or maybe you have some but not competition. And obviously local governments have a variety of reasons why they want to do this. In the rural areas, it's more a question of just getting good broadband. And in some of the areas that have some decent broadband, it may be an effort to get competition and lower prices. With all the hurdles in this legislation, there is an ability through a local vote to exempt a community from the restrictions of the statute. And I think what we're seeing in the last few years, as broadband has become more and more important and better understood by local elected officials as to just how important it is for the future of their communities and how frustrated people are about the lack of good broadband or the lack of competition, that these communities are saying, we don't know exactly what we want to do yet, but we want to have the flexibility to take some kind of action to help either incent others to build broadband in our communities or to build it ourselves. We're really seeing this huge number of communities, and not just passing these things by small margins, but they're all passing by really large margins, you know, 70 to 30. Some of the ones that passed a couple of years ago were over 90%. Mm-hmm. And to me, that demonstrates that it's really a bill that, if there was any reason for it in 2005, the reasons don't exist anymore now. And I would love to see the bill eliminated completely, and that may or may not happen. And if it doesn't happen, I think we'll see more and more municipalities and counties voting to opt out in the future.
There are some fantastic projects here in Western Colorado. Rio Blanco County is building a countywide fiber and wireless network with fiber on its way to every home and business in Rangeley and Meeker, the only two towns in that county. We spoke to IT Chief Blake Mobley on Geek Speak back in October. Meanwhile, the Delta Montrose Electric Association has begun taking orders for gigabit internet to homes and businesses in Paonia and South Montrose. This week, we heard Lieutenant Governor Donna Lynn stress the importance of rural broadband. What would it take for 2017 to finally be the year that something changes in the state law?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, here we are at the beginning of December, and I am hearing from some sources that there's going to be an effort to have this law repealed. I've heard from others that, well, maybe not a full repeal, maybe some modifications to it, which is what we dealt with last year. And it's just so hard to predict, given the very strong influence that the industry providers have at the state capitol, to really say, is this the year that we're going to get rid of this bill? I think there's a chance we could, and I think if we're not successful, I mean, there are a lot of other issues that local governments may need to deal with at the capitol this year. Some are broadband and communications related, and many others are not. And I suspect that if it looks like there's a movement and a decent possibility to have this bill repealed, local governments will be working hard to do that. If it looks like there's enough opposition that that's not possible, I suspect that local governments will probably use their limited resources on other issues that they deem more important. Not that they're more important than broadband, but given the fact that so many communities have opted out, that will remain the viable option if the bill is not repealed.
What happened with the bill that Senator Kerry Donovan introduced last year? We don't think it was actually written by Comcast, was it?
No, it wasn't. Actually, Senator Donovan tried to do a good thing last year. I mean, she talked to local governments, and she understood that there were what we consider to be unreasonable hurdles in promoting broadband. And we tried to come up with some very limited, targeted amendments to the bill that would eliminate the need to go to the voters, basically in connection with public-private partnerships. So if a city or a town wanted to be a service provider, they would still have to go to the vote. But if they were just investing and then looking for private sector partners to work with them and be the end user service provider, that would not require a vote. You know, we can either say that this is to her credit or to her detriment, but she felt like in order to provide those benefits to local governments, she reached out to the industry as well and said, are there any things that you might want to see changed in the bill? And there were, and they made suggestions to her, and she, you know, mixed it all together in the pot. And when it came out, while there were some improvements that local governments would have liked to have seen made, some of the stuff that the industry folks suggested were just not palatable. And in my opinion, the end result would have made it much more difficult to ever get to a vote to opt out. And I think the local government community, at the same time they thanked Senator Donovan for her efforts, they also made it very, very clear to her that in an effort to try to please everyone and put something in here that the industry would like as part of a deal to make certain things easier for local governments, it actually made it worse for local governments. And she heard us, and she decided to withdraw her bill after that. So I haven't spoken to her since last session. She gave us a lot of time to listen to our concerns and to try to work with us. She certainly understands local government concerns, being a former local elected official herself. I just think her good faith efforts to try to come up with something that would work for everybody ended up with something that didn't work for the local government community, and therefore she decided not to go forward with it. So that's kind of the story of last year's efforts.
My guest is Ken Fellman, Colorado's foremost public sector telecom attorney and former mayor of Arvada. Let's shift and talk about the national scene for a moment. First, can you just tell us about the work you've done with NATOA, the FCC, and your other roles?
Well, you mentioned NATOA. That's an acronym for the National Association of Telecommunications Officers and Advisors. It's the national trade association, if you will, of local governments involved in all things communications, telecom, broadband. So it involves cable TV, building broadband networks like we've been talking about, public safety communications, zoning issues for wireless towers, and there's a big push now to put smaller facilities in rights of way. NATOA is involved in all of these proceedings, is very, very active on a national level in lobbying for local interests at the FCC and also advocating for local issues in Congress. I've been a NATOA member for many, many years. I was privileged to serve on their board for about 10 years and as president for 4 of those years. So I remain active in the National Association. I also have served on what has been called the Federal Communications Commission's Intergovernmental Advisory Committee, the IAC, which has been comprised of mostly elected officials, some mayors and council members and county commissioners from all over the country, as well as some state officials, state senators, state representatives, a governor, and public utilities commissioner, and then a number of Native American tribal representatives. One of the spots on that committee is designated for a local government attorney, and because I am legal counsel for a number of different local governments as their general counsel, I was nominated and privileged to be picked to serve on that committee in that role. So that committee I served on for 4 years. They get renominated every 2 years. We're actually in the process right now of having to apply again, so I guess I'll find out shortly whether I continue to serve on that FCC advisory committee. But it was a great experience to look at what's happening sort of outside of Washington on a local level and then talk to FCC staff and talk to FCC commissioners and make recommendations to them on a variety of proceedings, whether they were consumer related or public safety related or rights of way control, broadband, the rewrite of the universal service and E-rate funding. All of those kinds of issues we were able to weigh in on and provide a state, local, and tribal perspective on how those issues affected our various constituencies.
Nice.
And I hope to be able to continue that in the future.
Over the past few years, the Federal Communications Commission under Chairman Tom Wheeler has championed pro-consumer and pro-competition policies. Malkia Cyril of the Center for Media Justice says, quote, everything we've accomplished over the last 10 years is now in jeopardy, from net neutrality to broadband privacy to prison phone reform and the lifeline expansion. That's all at risk now, end quote. What's your impression? Is Donald Trump a threat to open internet protections, for example?
Well, let me put it this way. The statement that you just read, I do not think that that is an understatement. I do agree that Chairman Wheeler has been, to the surprise of a lot of people, the most pro-consumer chairman, and he's accomplished more in what he's gotten passed than any of the chairmen in recent history. And I've been involved in FCC activity going back to the 1990s. And we've had some good chairs in that time period. It's not to denigrate any of the other great people who served as chairman, but Chairman Wheeler has accomplished a lot, and I do think a lot of it is at risk. The two key leaders on the Trump transition team dealing with technology are both on record as saying we don't even need an FCC,
right?
That the FCC should be abolished. Regardless of the administration, we have had an effort in Congress to try to overturn the net neutrality decision, the open internet order from the FCC, and now that the Congress and the administration are controlled by the same party, given the political philosophy of the people that are advising the president-elect on these issues, I do think there's a risk. I mean, like anything else, it's impossible to predict. It's going to be hard to say what's going to happen. Nobody knows who the new chairman is going to be, other than the fact that at some point the commission will shift and that it will then be in Republican control as opposed to being in Democratic control like it's been for the last 8 years. And at that point, I think it's going to be incumbent on any of us who are interested and involved in these issues to speak up and speak out and be actively involved in lobbying at the commission. And I do think there'll be an effort to roll back a lot of what many of us consider have been positive actions that the commission's been involved in. And it's going to be up to us to be the hopefully the voice of reason to maintain some of that. But I am very, very concerned about the risk and the threat that a lot of those advances that have been made under the Wheeler administration may be rolled back.
So there's concern about freedom of the press, technology policy, deregulation. We're hearing encouraging news in that three powerful congressional chairmen who support public broadcasting will continue in their roles in the House and Senate. Republican Thad Cochran of Michigan is chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee and has championed public media. Republican Roy Blunt of Missouri chairs the Senate Subcommittee on Labor, Health, Human Services, and Education. He's been strong on funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. KD&K, for example, gets about 20% of our overall budget from the CPB. Republican Tom Cole of Oklahoma continues to lead the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Labor, Health, and Human Services. He has also supported federal funding for public media. What about this talk of updating the 1996 Telecommunications Act in Congress this next session? Does that concern you?
Sure, it concerns me. There's one part of me that, you know, looks at the record of Congress overall for the last 6 or 8 years and wonders, you know, how are they ever going to get to telecommunications if they can't do immigration reform? But that's
right.
We can get into a whole long debate about that. But there has been talk about updating the act. One of the things your listeners may want to understand just historically, the main law in the United States is called the Communications Act of 1934. And the 1996 Telecom Act was the first time since 34 that there was a comprehensive update. There had been amendments over time, but the 96 Act was the first time there had been a comprehensive update.
Wow.
For some of us who are involved in that, it doesn't seem that long ago, but it was, you know, 20 years ago. And in a bill that was well over 100 pages long, the word broadband was used one time. So back in 96, we weren't even talking about broadband, and now it just rolls off the tongue like something that we all have to have. So, yes, the act needs to be updated. At some point, Congress will have to get around to doing that. And, again, given the relative lobbying strength of public interest organizations versus big telecom companies and local governments on one side of that issue, it's concerning to me as to what a new Communications Act would look like. NATOA has actually put out a blueprint of key foundational issues that ought to be considered in any kind of rewrite of the Communications Act, and it's a great starting place for discussion, but it is clearly different from a policy perspective in significant respects from what some of the large industry players are trying to accomplish. So I do think it's something we need to keep an eye on, both the House and the Senate Commerce Committees, which are the committees of primary jurisdiction over this kind of stuff, have talked about looking at the Communications Act this year. They talked about it last year, too. But, yeah, there's a chance that this could move forward. One of our senators, Senator Gardner, is on the Senate Commerce Committee. Congresswoman DeGette is on the House Commerce Committee. She's not on the Telecom Subcommittee. Senator Gardner, I believe, is on the Telecom Subcommittee in the Senate. So if something is introduced, Colorado will have some say with our delegation. And again, just like I mentioned earlier, it's going to be incumbent on all of us who are interested in these issues to be working with our congressional delegation to try to make sure our voices are heard if a rewrite does move forward.